Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, January 10th, 2020. Our guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me every Friday with news and insights on publishing and reading. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So with the books closed on 2019, sales numbers for the year are fresh in from NPD BookScan. How did the major publishers fare last year?
Well, I think it's fair to say that last year was a mixed bag, but the headline is this. This is according to NPD, which of course captures retail sales for about 85% of the print market. The trend of multi-year growth for publishers ended in 2019. Our listeners will recall for the last few years, publishers have shown small, but you know, meaningful growth in sales every year for probably the past 4 years now. Not by much, though, this year sales were down. Total sales were off by 1.3% overall, with nonfiction down about 1% and fiction off by 2.9%. But I say mixed because there were some interesting wild cards. Even though it was a down year by the numbers, there were some interesting wild cards here in 2019. First and foremost, obviously, we lacked a blockbuster, or at least a blockbuster like we had in previous years, for example, Michelle Obama. And a trend we called out last year is now reflected in the data, politics books. You know, politics books have really carried the industry to growth in recent years, while the bloom is off that rose. John Bolton probably is not going to reignite interest in 2020. I sincerely doubt that anything is going to really bring politics readers back into the fold like they were 3 or 4 years ago, at least not when Trump finally emerged on the scene. And in 2020, we have impeachment, we have an election. I have to believe that people are really going to only grow more weary of reading books about politics. And at this point, I think we've probably heard all we need to hear about Trump. Support him, oppose him. I think we pretty much know what we have there.
Meanwhile, Andrew, the decline in fiction continues, a now long-term or longish-term trend that has to be somewhat disturbing for publishers. How gloomy is it on that side?
Well, the good news is I think that the rate of decline for fiction has slowed down a bit. That's at least a bit of a silver lining. And general fiction, you know, literature was actually up. That's thanks to a big surprise in 2019, which was Delia Owens' debut novel, Where the Crawdads Sing, which turned out to be the best-selling book of 2019, selling nearly 2 million copies. That's, you know, more than double the 2018 leader, The President Is Missing, of course, by Bill Clinton and James Patterson. But, you know, you take out Delia Owens, which frankly, I don't think anyone counted on or expected to carry the year in publishing. And things do really look, well, a little bit dire. And frankly, the declines in the genres to me are a huge deal. They keep going down by big numbers and, you know, the declines keep going up, I should say. Romance, mysteries, westerns, sci-fi, they're all down big again for the year. Sci-fi down nearly 20%, romance down 14.5%. And, you know, these sales are not disappearing. They're just shifting. They're moving online. And they're moving to Amazon, which is really capturing a lot of these books in their independent and self-publishing programs. Now, the question we always ask is whether publishers are concerned about this. And we haven't seen them panicking, and I don't see any panic at the moment. You know, there's always something there to surprise us, though, I think, right? At the end of the day, you know, there was adult coloring books a few years ago that really carried the year, or, you know, electing a reality TV show president has helped publishing for the past few years. But I wonder how long we can count on that kind of surprise happening. And meanwhile, Amazon is proving very effective at luring readers, writers, avid readers, I should say, too, to their platform every year. And you have to wonder where and when the big publishers are finally going to step up and decide to draw the line.
The first big shows of 2020 are beginning to appear on the horizon. Andrew, the American Booksellers Association Winter Institute comes to Baltimore from January 21st to the 24th. And in Monday's issue, PW will preview that meeting, which has grown by leaps and bounds since it started in 2006.
Yes, indeed. The ABA really has created a hit with its Winter Institute for indie booksellers. And over the years, you know, it's moved around the country and it's grown to include more original programming. It includes author receptions and there's a very popular town hall. This year's event is set for Baltimore, which I think is always a pretty popular destination. It's easy to get to right in the middle of the megalopolis here on the Eastern Seaboard. And the program looks like another winner. Among the highlights, this year's program includes an antitrust symposium, which I believe is being held in Washington, D.C., a tour of the Penguin Random House warehouse in nearby Westminster, Maryland, a pretty robust professional program, again, including a session entitled The Life Cycle of the Book with the fantastic local Baltimore author Laura Littman, booksellers Bradley Graham of D.C.'s famed Politics and Prose, Tegan Tagani of Seattle's Queen Anne Book Company, and senior members of the publishing staff at HarperCollins. So great stuff there. And of course, there's the social aspect of the event, which includes receptions and drinks, including an opening night party celebrating romance authors in conjunction, with Bookstore Romance Day, which was a new event that was introduced last year.
And just how big has Winter Institute become? Andrew, you go just about every year. I have never been. I'm curious. And give us a sense of what this year's show will look like.
Yeah, so attendance at the Institute has grown significantly since the early years when it had difficulty hitting its stated attendance cap. I think its cap was 500. But under the leadership of Oren Teicher and amid what I think we can characterize, as a stabilization of the print book market, if not a boom, and a resurgence of indie booksellers in the wake of the borders collapse. ABA has sort of raised the attendance cap to accommodate its popularity. Last year's event featured more than 700 indie booksellers, 150 authors, several hundred other industry professionals, including publishers, sales reps, and service providers. We're even starting to hear whispers that this year's show, maybe it's getting a little too big because, nothing spoils success like more success, I suppose. But seriously, I understand that part of the show's allure is its intimacy and its networking, which a huge show would, arguably inhibit. But that said, we're looking at a very strong show this year. This year's Winter Institute also marks the first public appearance of the association's new CEO, the first female to lead the organization, Allison Hill. She officially starts her new job on March 1st, taking over for Oren Teicher, who retired in November. Hill is currently finishing up her duties as president and CEO of Romans in Pasadena, California. And while Hill's ascension is going to be cause for celebration, it's going to be bittersweet as well. The association is going to toast outgoing ABA CEO Oren Teicher, who, as we've said often on the show, really did do just a hell of a job at ABA and was very, very popular among ABA members. So to get back to how big the show is going to be, well, we really don't know because we don't have registration figures. But ABA COO Joy Dellanegra Sanger told PW that the 2020 conference is projected to be the biggest Winter Institute ever, with more booksellers, more authors, more author events. And also this year, ABA is offering day passes for booksellers who want to come in for the day, in addition to the option to pay for and attend the entire conference.
And Monday's PW has a revealing profile of your new ABA CEO, Allison Hill.
Yes. So as we noted, Allison Hill will assume the role of CEO of the American Booksellers Association on March 1st. She takes over, of course, for Oren, who retired in November after 10 years on the job. And she's moving to the position, of course, from Romans, the famous bookstore in California, where she was president and CEO. And for those who don't personally know her, she hails from suburban Detroit. She's held numerous positions in publishing and in bookselling on both coasts. In 2004, she was recruited and joined as general manager of Romans. She became VP and COO in 2007, became president in 2013. So pretty straight ascension for Allison Hill. And under her watch, Romans has done very well. In fact, it was the recipient of Publishers Weekly's Bookstore of the Year Award in 2008. And in talking with PW, I think Hill shows a really strong grasp of where the industry is and where the challenges and opportunities are. It's both a very exciting and a very challenging time for ABA, she says. And right now, she's pointing to, most of the ABA's growth is coming from new members that are fairly small stores. And she says that it's pretty clear that for indie booksellers, it's not just about selling books. Hill says that booksellers are in the business of community. As for the competition, on the subject of Amazon, for example, she makes really great points. For example, she says she's not sure that the typical Amazon customer is the typical indie bookstore customer. And I think that's probably right. And I think it goes back to her comment about community. As for Barnes & Noble, She sounded very positive about what new CEO James Daunt is going to bring to the table for the America's largest bookselling chain. She calls his arrival a net positive for bookselling that's going to infuse new energy into the ecosystem. And she struck a note that, you know, Oren Teicher did when he appeared with Len Riggio at BEA. "We're all in this together," Hill said.
So any sense of what's tops on her list when Alison Hill starts on March 1st?
Yeah, so she says her first order of business is really digging in and finding out how ABA members are really doing. Are they profitable? Are they just getting by? Do they see growth in their future? Are they at risk? And she also hopes to explore the business model of indie bookselling too, which of course is a broader task. And she says she's looking forward to engaging with all of the major publishers, with all publishers, I imagine. And that really just, all of this kind of really points to, in my estimation, how big a job it really must be to lead an organization like ABA. I mean, it's tough enough to run a member organization like this, but then you have to dig into the business models of your members, diverse members at that, which is clearly vital. And that's a whole other thing. And of course, add to all that, she has to uproot and move her life back across the country from California to the suburbs of New York, where ABA is based, in the dead of winter. So wish her a lot of luck with all that. And we're eager to see what she has to say at the upcoming Winter Institute.
And that's it for today, Friday, January 10th, 2020. Andrew Albanese, thanks so much for joining me on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Announced in October 2012 and completed the following July, the merger of Penguin and Random House reduced the Big Six by one. In the years since, Trade Book Publishing has counted its leading houses on a single hand, but that calculation may be quietly changing. And if you're wondering who is the insurgent publisher, then maybe you should ask Alexa. Over the last two decades, of course, Amazon became the dominant player in book sales. Amazon Publishing, launched in 2009, is also on the rise, says literary agent Mark Gottlieb of Trident Media Group.
When Amazon first started out, they were primarily in the nonfiction space, and we had actually sold them their very first two books. It was Penny Marshall's My Mother Was Nuts, you know, the film director and actress, and a memoir co-written by Deepak Chopra and his brother, who's a professor of liver medicine at Harvard, Sanjeev Chopra, called Brotherhood. It was interesting to see the ways in which those books were published and the ways in which the publishing community responded to Amazon just because of what had you know, taken place in the ebook space and how it has sort of forever changed book publishing. But we've seen, as an agency, we've seen Amazon go through its evolution all the way from that point up till now, where, yes, like you say, they have an imprint for thrillers, they have an imprint for women's fiction, for romance, for science fiction, fantasy, for literary fiction, for nonfiction. And big authors are making the leap to Amazon. I mean, they've just acquired a swath of titles from Dean Koontz, a former client of ours. They're also now publishing a client of mine, New York Times bestselling author Kate Moretti.
The return of the Big Six, next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.